from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big changes proposed to legal immigration yesterday. First, a lot less of it in a plan pushed by President Trump. Then, a new merit-based system, sharply favoring folks with better skills, education, and English. It's a profound change. It's on the table now. This hour On Point, the future of American immigration. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you think of the new proposal? A good idea? Un-American? Would your family have made the cut? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There's a bill in Congress, and the president yesterday saying he's all for it.
This legislation will not only restore our competitive edge in the 21st century, but it will restore the sacred bonds of trust between America and its citizens. This legislation demonstrates our compassion for struggling American families who deserve an immigration system that puts their needs first and that puts America first.
It's legislation that would upend decades of American immigration policy. The president says it's time for this, time for what's called the RAISE Act.
The RAISE Act ends chain migration and replaces our low-skilled system with a new points-based system for receiving a green card. This competitive application process will favor applicants who can speak English, financially support themselves and their families, and demonstrate skills that will contribute to our economy.
This would be a new immigration world. Joining me first today from Washington to look at it is Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent for the New York Times. You can link to Peter's reporting on the new push at our website, onpointradio.org. Peter Baker, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First things first, this would just slash legal immigration. I mean, it would change the way we do it, but above all, right out of the gate, it would slash it by how much, how soon?
Yeah, the overall impact is actually to cut legal immigration in half within a decade by about 50%. So we currently give away, we currently admit about a million people into the country and give green cards, legal residency status to about a million people. By the end of 10 years, that would be cut to around 500,000 people. Now, this is not actually going to increase the number of people who are coming in on job performance or skills-related applications, that number would stay the same, about 140,000. But as a proportion of the overall, it would be much bigger. And what would then be cut would mainly be family immigration. In other words, when one American citizen or resident is able to bring in members of his or her family from overseas.
This is a bill from Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas, David Perdue of Georgia, the RAISE Act, they're calling it, and it puts this merit-based system front and center on what measures, Peter?
Well, the idea is that they would be establishing a point system and people would be judged on issues like job skills, education, age, record of achievement, how well they speak English, and so forth. And, you know, their point is that we have admitted too many low-skill workers, that's what they say, over the years, and those compete with Americans, and we ought to be focused on our people who will add something to the American economy through particular skill sets. Now, critics say that that's a misunderstanding of things, that we need immigration, we need legal immigration because people fill jobs that Americans don't fill, and that there could be actually a workforce gap within just a few years. So that's there's a real hot debate about this.
A workforce gap, we've got to look at that. Republican Senator Perdue, David Perdue of Georgia, was there at the White House yesterday. Here's how he described the push.
Our current system does not work. It keeps America from being competitive, and it does not meet the needs of our economy today. Today, as Tom said, we bring in 1.1 million legal immigrants a year. Over 50% of our households of legal immigrants today participate in our social welfare system. Right now, only 1 out of 15 immigrants that come into our country come in with skills that are employable. We've got to change that.
Got to change it. The RAISE Act, they say, would do it. Donald Trump coming out yesterday saying he's all for it. Peter Baker, the chief White House correspondent for the New York Times, is with us. This goes right back to the president's campaign themes around immigration, does it not, Peter?
It really does, and it's in keeping with other actions he's taken since becoming president. You know, the first thing he did out of the box was to try to limit visitors from seven, now six, Muslim-majority countries to put a temporary halt on refugees coming in. He's also, of course, talked about building a wall on the southern border a lot, and he has stepped up arrests for those who are in the country illegally. So this is all part of a larger policy effort, and it's one that has great support among his most fervent fervent supporters.
What about its support in Washington? Is this a bill that looks like it could muster a passage on Capitol Hill?
No, at the moment it doesn't look like that. It looks like it would be a long shot. Not only do you have Democrats almost certainly going to be lockstep against it, you have a number of Republicans who were torn. Lindsey Graham from South Carolina just said yesterday, look, the number one and two industries in my state, South Carolina, are tourism and agriculture, I think in reverse order. And those are job areas that are filled a lot by immigrants. And immigrants are necessary to fill those jobs, he said. If you don't have them, hotels, restaurants, and other businesses would suffer. So you already have a split among Republicans, sort of the business-oriented Republicans that want immigration, and the more conservative Republicans who think it's gone too far.
Peter, there was a kind of debate yesterday also about the sort of country that we are and will be. Stephen Miller came out at the White House and was talking a lot about that. What's the heart of that debate?
Yeah, exactly. Look, you know, he was Stephen Miller is the president's policy aide, very conservative, a longtime advocate for tougher rules on immigration, and he made the case for why this is good for the country. But he was asked to produce statistics. He was asked about, particularly about the idea of the American ideal encapsulated on the Statue of Liberty, the famous poem about your poor and huddled masses. He was rather dismissive of that and said that wasn't even on the statue originally, and you know, what's the Statue of Liberty rule of law here? You know, we only allowed one-third as many legal immigrants in 1970, so does that violate the Statue of Liberty? What number violates the Statue of Liberty, he said. And it was a pretty contentious back and forth, but I think that captures, in fact, this very volatile and emotional and explosive debate, because it does go to the heart of a lot of different issues. What's fair for American workers? What's our national ideal in terms of a nation of immigrants? How do you find a balance?
And the president must see this as a winner. He's endorsing it. Do Republicans on Capitol Hill see this as a winner, as a winning political subject for them, Peter?
No, you didn't see a whole lot of them jumping on board yesterday. Obviously, Senators Cotton and Perdue are two of the sponsors, but beyond that, there was not a lot of rush to the barricades to join them. Obviously, a number of Republicans do support it, and it would have, you know, important support, but I think at the moment it would be far less than the 51 votes. It would need much less. The 60 would need to pass a filibuster in the Senate.
Peter Baker, Chief White House Correspondent for the New York Times. Peter, it's terrific to have you. Thank you very much for joining us for a minute today.
Hey, always great talking to you.
At the White House yesterday, Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas described what he sees as the goals of America's immigration system.
Our legal immigration system should accomplish two main goals. One, it should help American workers get a decent pay raise and have a higher standard of living. And two, it should help promote economic growth, make America more competitive in the world. Our current system simply doesn't do that. It's over a half century old. It is an obsolete disaster, and it's time for it to change.
A big change on the table right now, proposed by Senator Cotton, Senator Perdue, Donald Trump, the president embracing it yesterday. Alan Gomez joins us right now from Miami, immigration reporter at USA Today. Alan, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You call this a radical break from decades of American immigration policy and consensus. In your words, what's the change? What's the radical break?
Well, it's that fundamental idea that right now the U.S. immigration system is primarily dedicated to uniting families, as to you come into this country and being able to bring your parents, your spouses, your children, your brothers and sisters along with you.
This is what we heard the president call chain migration, the chain of migration, family connections. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's been the target of sort of these groups that want lower levels of immigration. That's been a target of theirs for years and years and years. And obviously, this is their first big opportunity to try to change that. And what it would do is just completely upend our immigration system to sort of a more colder, calculated analysis of, you know, what you can contribute, what your benefits are, how you know, do you have a PhD versus a master's? And so it's just really hard to overstate what a change that would represent. It would, you know, I talked about the relatives that you can bring over now. What this bill would do was limit you. You could only sponsor your spouse or your minor child. That's it. After that, you have to go through that process of being screened and vetted to determine what your, you know, what your ability to contribute to the American economy would be before you could come in.
So now you can bring parents, you can bring siblings, you can bring a pretty wide pool of family ultimately along with you if you come.
Your immediate family, exactly. And what happens is, you know, you bring your brother over, and then that brother can then bring his immediate family, and then you bring your parents over, and the parents can bring over their immediate family, and yeah, it leads to a very, you know, an immigration system that term chain migration is there for a reason. It's one person gets in, and you can start bringing in little by little over very many years, you can eventually get most of your family into the country, mm-hmm. and what this would do would cut that off very quickly.
We heard Tom Cotton there calling that the current system that you're describing right there an obsolete disaster. Have you heard an effective case made for that depiction of it, Alan?
Well, yeah. I mean, the coming in that way, right? You're not screening whether the people speak English. You're not screening what their education is or how they're going to contribute to the economy. But what it leaves out, I think, is that sort of intangible thing of that, you know, that immigrant spirit of people coming to this country and families, you know, those families being able to help each other out to creating that sort of base, that foundation for themselves. You know, you see this, in all the big countries in the United States where you get these pockets of these lower skilled immigrants that help each other and work each other and build each other up. And so that's where it's a little bit more difficult to just make this a very cold analysis like that. You know, the president back in January when he made his first address to Congress cited a study from the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine where he's found that first generation immigrants cost taxpayers $57.4 billion a year. What he left out is that second generation immigrants are a net positive of $30 billion, and by the third generation, it's a $220 billion benefit to the country. So as the generations proceed, they start contributing more to the economy.
Well, a whole lot of my immigrant forebears, I don't know about you, yours, would not have made the cut on English speaking or high education, but that was a long time ago. Here we are, it's 2017. Alan Gomez with USA Today, please stand by. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about American immigration policy and a pretty profound change embraced yesterday by President Trump to slash legal immigration by half, knock down family connections as a top priority. Really a radical turn from what immigration policy has been for a long time. President Trump campaigned on this theme. Now there's legislation on Capitol Hill, and the president says he's all for it. Alan Gomez is with us from Miami, immigration reporter at USA Today. You can join us. Have you heard the new plan to prioritize immigrants on the basis of education, English, high-paying job offers? Are you for it? Would your family have made the cut under these new rules? What about slashing legal immigration by half overall? Are you for that? How do you see the net effect of these changes on the U.S. economy, the country's culture? At the White House yesterday, Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, one of the sponsors of the bill, said the current immigration system is unfair to working-class American citizens. He said low-skilled immigrants take jobs Americans would do.
It puts great downward pressure on people who work with their hands and work on their feet. Now, for some people, they may think that that's a symbol of America's virtue and generosity. I think it's a symbol that we're not committed to working-class Americans, and we need to change that.
May depend where you come from. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said if this proposal were to become law, it would be devastating to his state's economy, which relies on this immigrant workforce. He said hotels, restaurants, golf courses, farmers will tell you, this is Republican Lindsey Graham, this proposal to cut legal immigration in half will put their business in peril. Here he was yesterday.
This immigration proposal is not going to go anywhere because it really would devastate the economy.
And, of course, you had Democrats on that theme yesterday. Here was a California Senator, Democrat, Dianne Feinstein.
We employ tens of thousands of agricultural workers. They are among the class that this would be prohibited. It would cripple agriculture if they didn't have the people coming in to do this work. And what we have found is Americans will not do this kind of stoop labor in 100 degrees temperature.
Roy Beck and Mark Zandi join us in just a moment. Alan Gomez, just first to you quickly, we're told this is modeled or similar to immigration systems in Canada, right next door, in Australia. Does it work for them? If it works for them, could it not work for the U.S.?
It's been working for them. Yeah, Canada was actually the pioneer of this system back in the 1960s, where they implemented this point system that Peter was talking about earlier. You know, 28 points if you're fluent in the native language, 25 points for your education. The higher educated you are, the more points you get. And it's worked for them, but it's also important to know that they've tweaked it over the years. After years of trying it, for example, in Canada, they recently allowed individual provinces, so the equivalent of our states, to sort of sponsor on their own individual jobs. So say, one area needs 5,000 workers in a particular field, they can start doing that. And so that's one of the criticisms of the broader program, is saying that, yes, it's in theory, it's great to get a bunch of PhDs into the country, but you need that more refined, that ability, that flexibility to bring in people in different industries. As Lindsey Graham was talking about, there they need agricultural workers, there they need hotel and tourism workers. And so that's the rub. That's what's missing from this proposal that I think a lot of people are upset about.
And a real change in tenor from that inscription on the Statue of Liberty that got such a hot workout yesterday. But here there are points for winning an Olympic medal if you want to become a legal immigrant to this country. Points for winning a Nobel Prize. That is not exactly your huddled masses yearning to be free, but those are very high accomplishments. Alan Gomez with USA Today. Please stand by there in Miami. Roy Beck joins us now from Arlington, Virginia. Journalist and public policy analyst, founded and has served as president of Numbers USA. It's an immigration reduction organization. It seeks to reduce legal and illegal immigration to the U.S. Roy Beck, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
And from Westchester, Pennsylvania, Mark Zandi joins us. Chief economist at Moody's Analytics, directs economic research there, has testified plenty before Congress on the costs and benefits of all kinds of proposed policy measures. Thinking about immigration today, Mark Zandi, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Roy Beck, what would you anticipate the consequences of a change to this kind of immigration policy would be?
Well, we have some idea of what it might look like because it puts the numbers back to where they were in the 1980s. So that's really not so far back to look. Nope. 1980s, we had a little over 500,000 a year. That's what this would do. It does change some of the numbers around who gets what. And it would also put us back to where we were before the late 1950s. Chain migration is a new invention, relatively speaking, in our immigration system. Congress added it in the late 50s. Until the late 50s, if you got into America based on who you were, even in the relatively open times before 1921, you got in based on who you were, not because of you were related to somebody other than your spouse and minor children. So what this would do is move us back to something that's very familiar in our tradition. It is radical. I agree with Alan. It's a radical change from what we have right now. But it's moving us to something that worked very, very well in the recent past.
I asked about consequences, and you take us back. I want to look. I get that, but look forward. What would the consequences be going forward on this path versus the path we're on, in your view, Roy?
Well, and what it will do was immediately stop adding a million lifetime work permits into the workforce every year and add just a 500,000. Now, the 500,000 is still way too high in our view, but it's a big help to the people who are having to compete directly with those workers. And, all of these quotes from people about agriculture workers, this bill has nothing to do with agriculture workers at all. Agriculture workers come in on temporary visas that are unlimited. A farmer can bring as many agricultures in as they want. This doesn't change Lindsey Graham's agriculture workers or Dianne Feinstein's agriculture workers. So it's not going to affect that, but it's going to affect the number of people who are competing with American roofers and service workers, hotel workers, and up and down the line, especially people who don't have a college degree. We have 50 million working-age Americans who are not in the labor market right now. Some of them are affluent enough to not have to work, but we have a huge labor surplus in this country, and we probably have a problem about some of those people having incentive to work, but they're dependent on the government, on charity, on extended family, rather than being productive right now. 50 million working age Americans. We do not have a labor shortage, except maybe in some very specialized places. And that's why, you know, that they're trying to make this point system improve the level of productivity of the people who do come in under these employment visas.
Roy, stand by there in Arlington, Virginia. Mark Zandi in Pennsylvania. What do you make of the likely economic, and there's more than economics at work here, and we'll look at that, but the likely economic impact of this change should it become law, Mark?
It would hurt the economy. The biggest problem we have now and going forward is a lack of labor. The unemployment rate is 4.4%, which is very low, and it's falling. And more importantly, going forward, we have the baby boom cohort, the very large cohort that's in their 50s and 60s that are retiring, which is very different than the situation back in the 80s when we had the baby boomers entering into the workforce and a lot of female participation increasing during that period. So very different times. And so going forward, the problem we're going to have if we want to grow more quickly is just we're not going to find the people. And it's not just skilled workers. In the proposed legislation, I think the idea to make our immigration law more skill-based is a good one. But we're going to have worker shortages across the board, not only skilled but low-skilled as well. And that's already evident in many industries in many parts of the country. So our biggest problem, the biggest limitation on economic growth for the foreseeable future is going to be a lack of labor. We need not fewer immigrants. We need many, many more immigrants.
Roy Beck says we've got a big crew sitting on the bench, just not in the labor market. 50 million, he's saying. You've got a huge labor surplus. You don't buy it, Mark?
No, that's not correct. The unemployment rate is 4.4%. The underemployment rate, which includes folks that say that are part-time, would like more hours, folks that have stepped out of the workforce, so they're not counted as unemployed, but say that they would want a job if they could find one that is suitable, is now 8.6%. And that is also consistent with previous times historically when the economy was at full employment. So no, that is not the case. And another just a data point that makes this clear is that there is currently a record number of open job positions across the country, 6 million. And as a share of the workforce, it's the highest percent in the data that we have. So no, we don't have at this point a problem with underutilized labor. Our problem is a lack of labor, and that's just going to become much more acute going forward.
What about wages for Americans who don't have a college degree? Roy Beck, talks about roofers and service workers and, I don't know, chicken choppers. Would their wages be more likely to go up if you constrict this legal immigration flow, Mark?
No. The evidence suggests that immigrants, even low-skilled immigrants, are complements to American workers. They're not substitutes to American workers. That if you bring immigrants into the country, they empower businesses to expand their activities and hire more of everybody, including American citizens. So there is no evidence, statistical, academic research that I'm aware of that would suggest that this is a problem for low-skilled workers. Again, particularly in the context of the current labor market, which is a labor market that is tight and going to get tighter.
Roy, you've got the chief economist at Moody's who doesn't see your huge labor surplus here and says this would be stepping on the garden hose.
Well, I don't understand it because the government statistics say there are 50 million working age Americans who are not working right now. Now, I agree with him. His statistics on the U3 unemployment, the underemployment rates, those are right, and they're good. But we do have this huge bench, tens of millions of working age Americans who are not working now. And it's at one of the lowest levels it's been. The work participation rate is one of the lowest areas it's been since the Great Depression. These are people who could be enticed back in the labor market. And there's plenty of anthropological studies, economic studies, the government studies that have shown that the labor surplus has had an effect on the wages in the poultry processing plants, for example, where the wages are well below what they were 30 years ago, the real wages. Same thing in meat packing processing, janitorial work. The law of supply and demand works in these areas.
But who's going to take care of all the boomers as they need people to help them creak around?
But here's the thing. If we actually run into a labor shortage,
yeah,
we can always get more labor at that point. Why would we bring it in ahead of the time? You don't have to wait to see who's right or wrong. You just wait to see when you actually have a labor shortage. But this is a wonderful time, the way that Mark describes it. It's like, wow, there's a lot of jobs out there. They need to figure out how to recruit again among American people and among especially disadvantaged peoples, the poor black and Hispanic and rural white communities of America. How do you put them to work? How do you recruit them?
Can I ask you, Roy, if I may, forgive me, but Mark Zandi and many others, I have to say, that I've read, are predicting that if we go down this path, and I get your argument, but they say our overall economic growth will slow because we just won't have the people to drive it. So is your main interest in economic growth, or is it in changing the behavior of American citizens, shaping how they work or don't work? Is it behavioral or economic?
Yeah. See, economic growth has to do with that's the overall size of the economy.
Yeah.
But that's really only important if the average wages and the median wages are going up. If you add 2 million, 4 million, 5 million immigrants a year, your economy is going to grow faster. But what does that do to the average wages of especially the more vulnerable members of your society? So, yes, I mean, the idea of this bill is to have a more just economic system, not a bigger economic system, but a more just economic system. And, you know, this is back in the 90s. President Clinton appointed Barbara Jordan, the civil rights icon, to chair the bipartisan joint commission. And they determined that the 1990 Act that moved immigration from 500,000 to 1 million a year had really been harmful to the more vulnerable members of our society, and that they also created huge backlogs. And there are a number of reasons they recommended having about 500,000 immigrants a year. Go back to what it was in the 80s and the numbers. This is something that, in terms of the kind of society you want to have, it's not about building the biggest economy. It is, as you say, about, you know, what kind of society do we want to be?
Alan Gomez, jump in here. And Mark Zandi, I'll come back to you on this. But Alan, how do you see what this is fundamentally about? Economics? Justice? Culture? Color, some say?
And this is why talking about immigration is so fascinating, because it's all of those. It was in one day yesterday, we talked about the ability of the U.S. immigration system to quickly respond to labor demands. We talked about, how you should be able to come into this country. And we had a debate about what the Statue of Liberty means. All of that is what makes this so fascinating. And I want to just touch on one point that Roy just mentioned, the idea of waiting to the point that we recognize what the shortage are and then adjusting. I think the only thing everybody on this call will agree with is that our immigration system, the economic aspect of it, is incredibly outdated. Everyone in Washington agrees that we're working under a 50-year-old system and it's time for it to be updated. And that's one of the big problems, is that, you know, he talked about unlimited agricultural visas, but I've met with so many farmers and growers who will tell me that the system is absolutely unworkable. They can't get people in a timely manner. And so that's one of the things that we could change to the system to make it more responsive to those labor needs that we're just not seeing coming out of Washington. Instead, we're getting kind of these very different proposals that we're talking about now.
Mark Zandi, a person might look and say, well, it seems to work for Canada, for Australia. Why not here?
Well, Canada and Australia have a system I think we should adopt, and that is a system that does reward immigrants that have higher skills or more financially capable that
you can basically buy your way in. If you invest enough money, you're in.
Yeah, and of course our immigration system has those aspects of it too, but I think there's a lot to like in the Canadian and Australian system, so we should adopt that. This is about the numbers, though.
Mm-hmm.
And key to, it's a win-win. It's a win for the economy in terms of a bigger stronger economy, but it's also a win for everyone involved, because and that means we to get there, we need more immigration, not less immigrants. So
why not just pull them off the bench, as Roy says? You just don't think they're there?
We know they're not there. I mean, that's just factual. I mean, there are millions of people that are not in the workforce, but there's good reasons for that. They're in school, they're retired, they're disabled, we have an opioid problem, they're incarcerated. We know exactly how many people are out there that say, I want to work, but can't. And it's not 50 million, it's closer to 1.6 million.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking about American immigration policy today and a radical change embraced yesterday by President Trump to slash legal immigration in half over the next decade, knock down family connections as the first priority, give a point system for education, for English, for accomplishment, make that the filter. Mark Zandi is with us today, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Roy Beck is here from Numbers USA, president there. Alan Gomez is with us, immigration reporter for USA Today, who's been following these issues for a long time. What do you make of what Tom Cotton and Senator Perdue and the president laid out yesterday? Is this a better path? Is it a worse path? Is it an American path? Would your family have made the cut? I don't know about mine. Lots of response online here. Bruce says GOP doesn't believe high-skill immigrants will take jobs from Americans, only want to protect jobs under the poverty line. This is politics, Bruce says. That's interesting. Greg says, I've got an idea. Rather than modify our immigration policy, let's invest in training our society. But here's another listener says, if the U.S. wants to remain at the top for another century, please bring the best minds from different parts of the world, whether they are poor, rich, blacks, whites, Asians, and cripples. U.S. does not need more janitors. What do you say to that, Mark Zandi?
No, we need all of the above. We want the most skilled, highly educated. We would love to get the Nobel laureates, but are we now?
Problem.
We are. We are getting the best and the brightest. We could do much better at it, right? I mean, one of the simple things to do here would be for any foreign student that graduates from an accredited American university, they get a visa to stay to work in the United States. You know, right now that's not the case. So a lot of people, and many of the folks I hire, I have to work hard to get an H-1B visa, and it's quite complicated, and these are the best and the brightest. And these are folks that if I can't get them here in this country, they go work wherever they came from, and instead of starting companies here in the United States, they start companies there. It makes no sense. So I'm all for that, but I do think we will need workers from A to Z, you know, high-skilled to the lowest-skilled. Because we're going to have shortages, and we are having shortages across the board. I mean, just go to any beach community in the United States today and talk to the small businesses there about their ability to get American workers. Go to agriculture areas, to hotels in many parts of the country. So these labor shortages are already evident, and it's already a constraint on the ability of these businesses to expand and grow and hire American citizens as well.
Let's go to Sergio, calling from Detroit. Hi, Sergio. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see?
I just want to take a step back and acknowledge that our presidential races have, for the past two terms, been about how broken our immigration system is.
Yep.
And that we have a problem with the undocumented and mixed family statuses in our country.
Mm-hmm.
That's 12 million people that pay payroll taxes, sales taxes, that contribute into a system that they don't get anything out of. This does not deal with the people that we already have here who live in the shadows. This doesn't deal with any type of solution for a situation where a kid is being basically pulled away from their family. And
Sergio, we get the difficulty of that. I mean, that is very, very hard stuff. What about the argument made yesterday? Because you've got American citizens here too in this game. The argument made yesterday that their wages for those who aren't college educated, for those in the lower rungs of the economy, their wages will go up if we have fewer people coming in.
I think that's all political because, as one of your callers said, our unemployment rate is really low and it's only dropping. And historically, immigrants are entrepreneurial. So even with the previous callers that you had with the chained immigration system, you have to provide that you can provide for yourself and whoever you're sponsoring. So it's not just because you're related to somebody. And it's just, you can't really put low and high skilled immigrants against one another. We can definitely try to encourage more, but that's just, I feel like that's un-American.
Sergio, we've got it. Let me get one more, and I'll bring it to you, Roy. David in Lexington, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm a lefty Democrat. I voted for Sanders in the primary and Clinton in the general, and I'm in favor of this bill. Mass immigration, according to the NAS study, the National Academy of Sciences last fall, results in a transfer annually of $500 billion from low-wage Americans to business owners because the oversupply of cheap labor allows the business owners to reduce wages. And as Mr. Beck said, the wages are terrible compared to a generation ago. And the theory that the second and third generation are going to be net positive, I would say that the population explosion due to the current million a year is likely to cause so many environmental problems as to eat up that money. As for the notion that if there are jobs Americans won't do, no. Americans go into the mines, one of the dirtiest and most dangerous jobs, but there are jobs that don't pay enough. And if you're an American in a rich country competing against someone who comes from a third world country where what wages that look like junk to an American look like manna from heaven to these people who immigrate here.
Yep.
It's not fair. And as for making the cut, I think that's irrelevant. This is a very different country from 100-150 years ago. And I'm surprised that people like Mark Zandi don't acknowledge that robotics is likely to put a lot of Americans out of work. There, I read in the New Yorker and the New York Times that in 15 years or so, half the jobs in the country are likely to go away. And this year, self-driving taxis are supposedly coming to Massachusetts.
So who needs all the extra labor? Roy Beck, David is singing your song, but he's sort of challenging the Zandi view. So let me take it there first. I'll bring it right to you, Roy. Mark, you hear the progressive lefty there who says, this looks like a way to me to put some foundation under wages here.
Tom, you're talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd say a couple things. First, I sympathize with the situation that many low-income households have found themselves in. There has been a very clear skewing of the income and wealth distribution, particularly over the last 30, 35 years.
I don't think they want sympathy. They want higher wages. David says this would help.
And I'm not giving them sympathy.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to that view.
Yeah.
I understand it. But I don't think the solution to that problem is to restrict immigration. I think there are many other, in fact, that would be wrong-headed and counterproductive for those lower income, low-skilled workers.
Why doesn't immigration put downward pressure on wages? I mean, you can see the logic that David is pulling out of it. You bring in people from the third world, put them to work in the U.S. They're happy to work for a $7 and whatever federal minimum wage.
Because there's a lot of moving parts here. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm a landscaping firm. I have mm-hmm. 10 people at the height of the summer season.
Yep.
And half of those folks are immigrants, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can cut lawns, and half are American citizens. Half
yep.
are immigrants, half are American citizens.
Yep.
So I can go and I can do my work and get my get business from my community and employ 10 people. If I can't find the immigrants, then I'm not going to be able to hire the American citizens. I'm not going to be able to compete. I'm not going to be able to provide the income and work to not only the immigrants who aren't there, but to the American citizens. So the evidence strongly suggests that that immigrants, low-skilled immigrants, are not substitutes for American workers. They are complements to American workers. And by the way, one of your previous callers made an excellent point, and that is immigrants, by definition, they're risk takers, right? People don't move from one country, come to another without taking mm-hmm. some real risk.
Yep.
They're entrepreneurial, they're innovative. Lots of evidence of this. They start companies, and who do they employ? They employ American citizens. So it's just not factually correct to claim or argue that net-net, you know, certainly there are cases. I mean, there's cases for everything. But, no, on net, immigration is good for everyone and good for low-skilled American workers. Now, low-income workers have there's a big problem. I totally agree with that. But there are much better ways to address that problem than limiting immigration.
The robots are coming. They're going to do all the jobs, Mark. Why do we need more immigrants?
I got a great story for you. So the chief economist of Google, Hal Varian, fantastic economist. We asked him that question because you'd expect, you know, this guy would know something about this. He went back to the New York Times and back to the 1940s, and he picked out an article from each decade since the 1940s that said the robots are coming. Literally, they had robots in the headline. They're going to take our jobs. So this is an age-old, long. I'd say bring it on. Our problem isn't robots taking our jobs. Our problem is we don't have enough productivity growth. I mean, our problem is productivity growth. Too low, not too high.
Roy, I hear you chomping at the bit there.
Well, I just want to say, let's look at the people. Let's look at African Americans. 40% of African American millennials who aren't incarcerated. These are 40% African American millennials are not working. And 40% of African American millennials that have a high school only, and 70% of African American millennials that don't have a high school degree are not working. Now, these are people who could be enticed to be janitors. And that's the same thing, of course, whether they're white or Hispanic or anything else. The point is, we have gigantic economic dysfunction in some of our communities. We don't need more janitors or anything of that type. And chain migration accidentally brings in janitors. If we do need janitors, let's hire people because we need janitors specifically. Let's not have 500,000 people a year come in with no regard to their skills, whether their skills are needed, what their education is. That's what this bill cuts out, all of that accidental immigration. And let's see how the point system works with 140,000. If it turns out that we really can show that we've got needs that go beyond that, then it can be adjusted. There can be more, and they can change the point system. But getting rid of the 500,000 accidental immigrants, that is a huge fix. And I should have answered earlier. One of the things we do know what will happen based on the history. Jeffrey Williamson is the foremost immigration historian. He's at Harvard, and he has found that every single time that America has had a big drop in immigration, there have been a number of them, that the wage rate has increased for people, especially at the bottom. Economic disparity has narrowed. So many of the issues that Bernie Sanders was talking about during the campaign.
Yeah, we got it. Our time is short. I want to get a couple more calls, Roy. Forgive me. Ned in Alpine, Texas. Ned, you're on with Roy Beck, Mark Zandi, Alan Gomez.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, let me just state first that I'm a 57-year-old individual.
Great.
Who's worked on the Kucinich and Nader campaigns. I'm extremely liberal.
Okay.
And I got a couple of points. I'm an unskilled laborer. I basically do landscaping. I also am a real estate investor, so I pay a lot of property taxes. And a couple of points about the chain migration. Whenever you bring in an unskilled worker and they bring their families in, I end up paying for their education. Mexico, Guatemala, China, and India don't pay for their education. I do. Okay? And that's the employers passing that cost down line. A couple of other points. When I was born in 1960, we had 180 million people in this country. There's almost 330 million people now. I don't need more people. I don't have enough parks now here in the state of Texas. I don't have enough roads here in the state of Texas. I don't want more people. And as far as us not doing the work, I would love to double my prices and do more work. I could find more American employees. And you might want to ask Zandi and some of those people, ask them what they pay. Are they paying top scale wages? Or are they paying bottom scale wages and not being able to find Americans? Those are all valid points to me.
Ned, I really appreciate your call from Alpine, Texas. Alan Gomez, we heard earlier from Peter Baker saying that the political prospects for this legislation were not good. Now, we've heard several callers today say it sounds good to me. How do you, and push back as well, but how do you read the prospects for a real change along these lines, Alan?
I think one of the things that we heard from the White House out yesterday that was 100% accurate is that when you ask Americans what they think about a merit-based immigration system versus a family-based immigration system, that they do support it. Pew had a poll a couple of years ago. It's 56-37 in support of a more merit-based immigration system. And I think if you talk to, you know, as we're hearing today from these calls, there's a lot of support for that general idea. I think the breakdown and the problem that this bill has, why it hasn't received any sort of, it was filed in February, it hasn't had a single committee hearing, and we already heard some big opposition to it. The problem is in both that drastic 50% cut in the number of people coming and the total sort of almost not complete elimination, but that incredible reduction in family immigration. So it's not an either or proposition, I think, when people are asked in a poll, which do you prefer? But the way it was presented in this bill, I think, is so drastic. That's why we haven't seen any support in Congress, and I don't see how they get over that.
Mark Zandi, how do you see populist politics rubbing up against maybe business interests who want that flow of labor?
We'll get immigration reform, and I think eventually, because the economics are compelling. And of course, I'm an economist, so everything, you know, it's a hammer and the nail syndrome. So everything feels like the economy to me. But, you know, I think we'll get a system that is more skill-based, because I think that does make sense. And I think Canada, Australia are good case studies, and we can copy that and we'll benefit from that. But I do think we'll get immigration reform that ultimately will allow for more immigrants in the country because, you know, as Roy points out, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and I think the pudding is going to say we need more workers.
So there, maybe that's where we end up. More merit-based filters on immigration? Maybe not. Fewer immigrants. Roy Beck, I know you'd like to see fewer. This is a hot debate, and we hear lots of views on it right here today, the day after President Trump comes in with his big embrace. We shall see where this goes. Mark Zandi, Chief Economist at Moody's Analytics. It's terrific to have you as always. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Roy Beck, President of Numbers USA. Roy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Alan Gomez, Immigration Reporter at USA Today. Alan, thank you very much for your time and insights.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for all your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.